Thousands of people took to the streets in Atlanta last week. They were protesting recent police shootings of two African-American men. Organizers met with Mayor Kasim Reed and other city officials to talk about police reform.
Obviously, they have concerns about policing, and we had a very substantive conversation about the way that we believe the police conduct themselves.
It's hard to hear the mayor there. He's saying that they had a substantive conversation about police procedures. The protests here, for the most part, have been peaceful. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution columnist Bill Torpey credits that to the way Atlanta has handled dissent and protest in the past. But recent violence around the country has raised questions about how law enforcement can serve as both protectors and peacemakers. And Bill joins me now. It's good to have you.
How are you doing?
So it was interesting to me that you, in one of your columns on this, one of your pieces on this, you quote the head of the state police training agency, and he's talking about a warrior mentality among modern police officers. I wonder what that means, that warrior mentality.
Well, that was a fellow named Ken Vance, and he heads the state training department. And it was he was at a meeting where a bunch of preachers and police chiefs were meeting to try to kind of get some sort of dialogue going with communities trying to tamp down the anti-police mentality. And he was saying that there needed to be more of a servants, not warriors. The idea that you would go in and talk to the lady, get out of your car while you're on patrol, talk to the lady on the porch because she knows what's going on in the neighborhood. What happens a lot of times is there's a lot of crime going on and people won't come forward to the police. They won't talk to the police, either because they have had run-ins with them themselves or they just feel that they won't be helped.
So when people talk about the Atlanta way, a lot of times they're referring historically to the civil rights movement and that relationship between black leaders and Atlanta business leaders and how that led to more peaceful dialogue and a solution to disagreements through meetings, personal meetings, face-to-face relationships.
Right.
How does that translate now to the city's approach to protests?
Well, I think part of it is that, interestingly, for instance, Chief George Turner was an aide to Andrew Young years ago. When he first started out, he was a driver for Andrew Young. He learned firsthand while driving around all over the city with the then Mayor Young, you know, how things are done, how interpersonal relationships occur. You don't have to be antagonistic, at least all the time.
So one of the things that distinguishes Atlanta's police force is its diversity. How have they been successful, where other cities have not, in hiring a police force that's more representative of its community?
Well, that has been, I guess, a conscious effort with the department. I think I pulled the figures, and it was something like it almost matches what the population is, you know, 52% black, 39% white, what have you. And, I mean, it almost was exactly along those figures.
Yeah, it's just a few percentage
points. A few years ago, there were some stories coming out that police departments were overwhelmingly white in black neighborhoods. And black cities, for instance, and that saw a disconnect between the force and the communities. Although it's not as simple as that because a lot of departments have tried to get black officers and they've just had issues with that for whatever reason.
I wanted to take a listen to a clip from one of the protesters. He's part of the Atlanta Is Ready group. This is Avery Jackson, and he's talking about why he wants to get rid of the Atlanta way.
The Atlanta way is this civil rights tradition of having one leader who's suited and booted, who might preach on a Sunday, but who gets invited to the table, and his job, and his, because he's a man, his job is to relay the message back to the people, but never to give the people an opportunity to relay the message back up.
Do you feel like that's a fair characterization of how the Atlanta way works today?
Well, to some extent. I mean, there's always going to be people, young people, pushing back, I guess, if they're not the man who's suited and booted, so to speak. Then they will be looking at it somewhat from the outside. So, there was three or four different groups that were there at the meeting with the mayor, and there was some inner like a little bit of inner battle between the groups as to who was being heard, who was being the voice of the protests. And, you know, you're never going to have a true voice for the protests because there's always going to be divergent people speaking.
So let's go a little bit further into what this means in terms of police trying to maintain a balance between safety and freedom. And it was interesting to me in some of your writing, you quoted a retired detective, Ken Allen, who said it's not policing that has changed, but it's the police, because cost-cutting has meant that they've lost institutional memory. What does that mean?
Right. Well, that's what's happened in a lot of places, including the newspapers and radio, too.
It's true.
In Atlanta, for instance, they have changed the way the pension works. A lot of older people have left, and a lot of younger people aren't going to stay for as long because they see better better opportunities either in other departments or even outside of policing. That is one of the problems that large departments have had, is getting good recruits and then keeping the good recruits. And that's what he said. He said that, you know, we aren't like other jobs. You know, we can take your life and your freedom away. So we should be trained and we should be paid, and you should try to keep good police officers on the forces.
What did people talk about was lost? What is lost when you lose the older generation of police officers?
Well, you lose I guess the glue that keeps a department together. You lose institutional memory, as you said. You lose because people have to make split decisions. And a new officer, you know, with a year or two, is going to have fear jump in quicker. I mean, fear is always there, but I think the older officers are able to ascertain what's happening in a situation and react in a better, you know, they have experience on their side, so they can react better.
And yet it appears that the Atlanta Police and Chief Turner are thinking things through in sort of a deliberate fashion. I say that because you describe the meeting that they had in which they were talking about more community-based policing. And not long after that meeting took place, there was the tragedy in Dallas. And people questioned, should those police officers in Dallas have been wearing riot gear? Should they have been better protected? But when Atlanta protests occurred, the police chose not to wear riot gear. Why?
It's an interesting point there. That in fact, the Dallas shootings happened that night after the Mr. Vance said, we need to be servants, not warriors. I called him back the next day. I said, well, what do you think now? Do you change? You know, does this change your feelings? He said, not one bit. I guess it is a hard decision to do, but the thought is that if you don't go in looking like you're expecting a riot, that you won't be as antagonistic, and that won't raise up the other side's ire as quickly. Chief Turner did tell me that, you know, we did have our shields and helmets in the cars, you know. So, I mean, we could react to if anything did happen, we could react. But I think part of it is not going in. I'm from Chicago, so I've been seeing a lot of the 1968 police riots, so to speak, on TV recently. And that was just kind of a lesson in not how to do things.
So what is the estimation of how the Atlanta police is doing? And I ask that in light of the lawsuits filed in 2009 after the raid of the Atlanta Eagle went so very badly. On balance, how do we evaluate Atlanta police and their performance?
Oh, well, I talked to Dan Grossman, who is the attorney who filed the suit, and he's been, and that was in 2009. There was a raid on a gay bar, and the police, Red Dog Squad, and other officers were very rough, needlessly, on a lot of the patrons. Anyway, Grossman has been watching. He's the attorney. He's been watching the department since then. He's filed other suits. And he said that, you know, that they've handled the protests well, but not have handled the training and discipline as well as he wants to see. Chief Turner does have a different feeling of about that, but that is something that has been under scrutiny for many years.
We've only got about a minute left, but have they changed their training policies, especially in terms of de-escalation?
They have, to some extent. There are fewer, or actually right now I think it's about the same in excessive force complaints. Whether you're getting more complaints because there's more excessive force or people feel more confident about coming forward where they wouldn't have done it before, that is a question. You know, I mean, it's one of those things
that's
hard to ever determine.
All right. Thanks so much to Bill Torpy. He is a columnist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You can find a link to his column, Bill Torpy at Large, at gpbnews.org. Bill, thank you.
Thank you.